Hello and welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. With over 15,000 downloads since launch, we are excited to bring you Season 4 featuring in-depth content on business, global affairs and news across Singapore, ASEAN and the United Kingdom. We've had some extraordinary guests on our channel, including W Series driver Abby Eaton.
And I've got thoughts for the future now. I'd love to try and kind of mentor some of the younger drivers, you know.
Renowned UK international education champion, Professor Sir Steve Smith.
Over about a four-year period, we kept increasing the resources going into mental health division.
Chief Executive and Director of the London Design Museum, Tim Marlowe.
The way we design is actually thinking about the needs of everyone.
And CEO of the industry cluster group at JTC, Alvin Tan.
If you look at PDD, we are creating an ecosystem of companies, government agencies and industry associations in the digital space.
Thank you, as always, for your continued support, and I hope you enjoy this podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to our podcast, Bridging the Sustainability Gap. I'm Lorena Paglia. I sit on the board of BritCham. I'm part of the Sustainability Business Committee at BritCham. I also have a background in sustainability. My role at Microsoft, I am the Business Program and Operations Manager for Data and AI. As part of this series, I will interview BritCham members and beyond on the work that they undertake across sustainability development, industry transition, and the ways in which this impact is helping to bridge the sustainability gap. As part of this, we will talk about the green economy and what this means across finance investment, carbon development, and mass industry transition, including the gaps we have in sustainable development and how individuals, industries, businesses are driving impact to bridge that gap. The reality is this is not easy and no one person can do this on their own. The aim of this podcast is to celebrate great work that is being done, talk openly about the reality of the challenges that exist and explore the way in which these gaps are being addressed, bringing our listeners on a learning journey of what more can be done and hopefully inspire in how to bridge the sustainability gap. Joining me today for our first Bridging the Sustainability Gap series are Søren Nicolaasen, CEO of NetWest Markets here in Asia Pacific. Thank you so much, Søren, for joining us today. It's an absolute pleasure to be having this discussion with you.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, let's dive right in. Søren, I've been fortunate to spend a little bit of time with you recently, where during our interactions, I learned not just about NatWest Asia Pacific's approach to sustainability, but also your own personal drive and leadership in this arena. Could you share with us what sustainability is for you personally and why it is so important for you? And as part of that, how, as the CEO for Asia Pacific, what you need to think about in bringing people with you on that journey?
Sure. So I'm no scientist, but I do believe that we have a climate problem we need to fix. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that the world needs a helping hand. Sustainability, in its broader sense to me, is about finding that right balance between meeting the needs of the current generations and that of future generations. And in doing so, what we need to balance, of course, is climate, economic, social, and biodiversity challenges, and probably a few others that I haven't even thought about. It's a rather complex equation, but one that we must find a solution to. On a more personal level, I've been a keen scuba diver for nearly 30 years, and the impact on coral reefs from warmer oceans and fish stock from overfishing are real issues in many parts of the world. So I would love to be able to continue enjoying the wonders and the beauty of the underwater world. So we desperately need to keep the ocean clean and healthy. That's just one example of the many challenges we have. And if you think about it from my role as CEO of a bank's perspective, sustainability or ESG, whether environmental, social, or governance issues, it impacts our business every day. Whether I engage with our customers, with our regulators, or participate in internal governance forums, the climate and the sustainability conversation is never far away. At NetWest, for example, climate is one of the few key pillars we focus a lot on. It's not a sustainability agenda, but a real core part of our strategy that also drives business opportunities. You know, doing good can be expensive, you know, especially when you're developing new and untested technologies, but it can also be an opportunity to drive business and actually make money. And to the other parts of your question, Lorena, in terms of bringing people along, I think it's a good question and it's super important to do, but actually not that hard in my experience. You know, keeping global warming down, mitigating impacts from climate change is something most people can agree on. Not everyone is on the same page in terms of the how and what needs to be done and by when. But the ultimate goal of creating a sustainable future should be fairly easy to agree on. It's certainly something we talk a lot about in the bank, both from a business perspective, as mentioned, in terms of exploring opportunities, but we also educate ourselves quite a lot. So at NatWest, for example, we work very closely with the likes of the University of Edinburgh. They've designed training courses on climate issues to really make us all smarter on this journey. Some of those training courses on offer are mandatory and some are voluntary. And the take up of the voluntary training is really, really high. I think that's a good measure of our colleagues being interested and caring and coming along on the journey.
Thanks, Soren. There is so much in what you just explained, from what it means from a business markets perspective through to the impact in the oceans that you've visibly seen as you go through scuba diving, all the way through to the upskilling and education of people within the bank as well. So there's so much in that alone that we can unpack. I'm just going to touch really quickly on the opportunity that it has, because you mentioned that, yes, it's an investment, but there's some great opportunities that come out of that. And I think that's one of the challenges that we do have in terms of a mindset shift within sustainability, because, yes, it is an investment, but if you're doing it right and you're doing it properly, you actually create not just productivity and efficiencies within your business and doing more with less, for another way of explaining it, or using resources more efficiently, but you're also going to be able to create new products, new markets, or new economies that comes out of that too. And I think there's a lot of evidence around businesses that take this sustainability model approach who have these outcomes and achieve these goals. But there's a lot of data that still needs to come in around that, but there's quite a few proven points. So we're going to shift now into the role of finance in sustainability and also NatWest's activity in sustainability in Asia. We certainly have come a very long way. When I think about discussions that I used to have with my customers 12 years ago, especially here in Southeast Asia, a lot of my customers then had to self-fund their sustainability projects, especially where they had a big vision in sustainability. Thank goodness, sustainable finance has come a long way, and that doesn't need to happen so much these days in terms of self-funding. We've also seen recent UN reports come out about financial investment in sustainability. So the IPCC report calls for the mass utilization of nature-based solutions and technological innovations to address these sustainability challenges that we're faced with. But an important part of that is the financial investment that's needed to make this possible. When we look at the UN Adaptation Gap report from 2022, it talks about these what's needed for financial investment and the fact that we have between an estimated 5 to 10% shortfall, especially in the emerging nations. So my question to you, Soren, is what does NatWest and or the financial industry need to do to address or consider these gaps? What are some of the biggest challenges that are faced here? Because again, we know none of this is easy or simple or straightforward in some ways. And what are some of the ways that the financial industry and providers can do more here?
Yeah, so it's a long question that requires a long answer. I'll try and sort of keep it relatively brief. This, of course, is a very big theme. A colleague of mine recently noted that finance can be a force for good. And I fully agree with that. As banks, we make decisions every day on who we lend to and for what purpose. And just as importantly, we make decisions on who we decide not to lend to. According to Boston Consulting Group, who issued another report on the need for financing not too long ago, in order to achieve net zero, public and private sector entities across the globe will need approximately $3.8 trillion in annual investment to 2025, or $150 trillion the next 30 years. forget the numbers, they're big, but it's a frightening amount of money, of which not nearly is currently available, especially not in emerging markets, where, of course, it is so desperately needed and can have a very big impact. But finance does have a role to play, a big role to play. At NatWest, for example, on a more micro level, we work closely with our customers, supporting them in their transition plans. That ranges from green mortgages for people buying a home or refinancing a home in the UK, to financing energy improvement initiatives for SMEs or the largest multinational corporates. Last year, the bank launched a report on opportunities for SMEs in the UK in sustainability. And the report concluded that by 2030, the UK economy could benefit from a potential £175 billion of revenue and create 260,000 jobs in the process. All that, of course, requires financing, and it's an opportunity for the bank. So when we talk about this being more than just a sustainability agenda, those numbers kind of tell you why. Finance also plays a very big role in the international bond markets. Debt investors are uniquely positioned to help accelerate the transition to net zero. That's a market of some $127 billion, so slightly bigger than the global equity markets. NatWest recently launched a report on climate risks and opportunities. We surveyed 225 asset managers globally, of which about a third were from Asia, to get insight to what debt investors expect from issuers of bonds. And the messages they gave was very clear. As asset managers, pension funds, and other investors in the bond markets, they make progress on their own net zero targets. They now expect bond issuers, whether corporates, financial institutions, or sovereigns, to adhere to climate-related disclosure standards. So what investors are telling the issuers is that they need to meet increasingly ambitious decarbonization targets. And in order to do that, investors need the support from issuers through reliable data and disclosures. Not easy, very hard to do, but an absolute necessity. An interesting stat from the survey showed that 71% of all the investors we surveyed said that their organization has already made net zero commitments. So we asked them why they had done that. And the two top categories of that were delivering investment returns and achieving alignment with sustainability commitments. The first part of that is interesting. Asset managers, of course, are not charities. The CIO of one of the largest insurance companies in Singapore put it very clearly at a conference recently here in Singapore, where he said, "We have a fiduciary responsibility to our customers. We invest in renewable energy because it gives good returns." So from that particular subset, the business angle, the opportunity comes in very clearly.
Thanks for that, Soren. I think listening and reflecting on what you were just explaining, it talks about how big the complexity of the issue is, especially when we're talking about sustainable finance. Two key themes that keep coming through to me is the importance of data, especially in the transition that we're entering into right now. Data is such a big part of how we're going to make the right decisions around this, but yet we're at the beginning of how we capture and report all that data. But then also the other key theme that keeps coming through, so whether we're talking about individual perspective of how of sustainable finance all the way through to industry, government, and then also commercial sustainable finance, is the fact that this investment is needed. But what's proven as a result of that is the upskilling that occurs as a result of that, and then also the economic opportunity that comes out. So it's a consistent theme that keeps coming through, I think, when we're talking about the importance of sustainable finance in this space. I think it brings us to the next segue of another piece of the finance, the sustainable finance and development that's required here. So a big part of our interactions for this session, you proudly share with me insights to a couple of new bonds released to market, a blue bond and a social bond. If I can focus on the blue bond for a moment, it's really, really fascinating because I, in complete ignorance, recently learned about the significance of and the scale of the blue economy. And I'm still have so much learning that I need to do in this space. So for those of you that are not aware, the blue economy is everything associated to our oceans. It's remarkable because it is the least understood and talked about economy. So, for example, we often refer to green finance, for example, or we don't necessarily talk about it in terms of what this means into the blue economy. So it perhaps can be argued that solving ocean climate challenges will have the biggest impact on our ability to influence climate change globally. Soren, what can you tell us about the blue bond released via NatWest recently, and what are some of the parameters needed to make it a blue bond?
Thank you for that question, Aurelia. It's a really important one. I have to say that there are days in my job where I get really excited and sometimes even a little proud of what we're doing. NatWest supporting Ørsted, which is a Danish energy company, issuing their blue bond, what was definitely one of those days. According to the UN, the blue economy is valued at some $3 trillion annually. It supports the livelihoods of about 3 billion people worldwide. And from a climate perspective, of course, the ocean absorbs around 1/4 of the world's annual carbon dioxide emissions, thereby mitigating climate change and alleviating its impacts. The blue bond is a relatively new form of a sustainability bond. It's essentially a debt instrument that is issued to support investments in healthy oceans or blue economies. The history of that is relatively new. It only started about 4 years ago. The Republic of the Seychelles, I believe, was the first one to launch a blue bond. And since then, mostly the issuers have been sovereign entities. The bond that we issued for Ørsted became the first energy company in the world to issue a blue bond, and it was appropriately issued on World Ocean Day and was issued with the purpose to finance initiatives that specifically target offshore biodiversity and sustainable shipping. And on biodiversity, the company will invest in measures to protect and restore marine and coastal biodiversity. And for the shipping part, it's about playing a leading role in developing green ocean fuels, enabling decarbonization of ocean vessels, which clearly is a very key initiative. So all super exciting, one that, as a keen diver, of course, I hope we will see a lot more of. There are challenges. We still need some better regulation around it and some guidance from probably the International Capital Markets Association, which I hope will eventually materialize. But, you know, very, very exciting initiative.
I mean, that's a great example of the significance of the blue bond. When I listen to what you're just describing, Soren, and the fact that so few of us know to the full extent of the blue bond, there's so much more learning and education that needs to take place in this space. So already it's quite a significant part of what the financial industry is looking into, which is fantastic to see and hear. I just want to shift now into talking about NatWest specifically and the priorities in sustainable development and climate change, especially when we're talking about carbon markets. We know carbon markets are the hottest topic right now in terms of people understanding this all the way through to scope 3, and then also how we're going to fund what needs to be achieved in the road to net zero. So can you tell us a little bit more about NatWest priorities here in Asia Pacific and how it translates to some of the market priorities that we're seeing right now?
Sure. So from the bank's perspective, everything around sustainability, sustainable finance, climate, what have you, is driven from the very top of the bank. We took a climate strategy to shareholders in 2022. It was approved by shareholders, and it basically is structured around four pillars and have some very specific targets in there to both measure ourselves and, of course, and see how we're making progress. First one of those is about supporting customer transition to net zero. So we made a very clear statement about an aim to provide £100 billion of climate and sustainable funding and financing between the 1st of July 2021 and the end of 2025. We've got targets in terms of helping to end the most harmful activities from a climate perspective. And the most obvious of that is a phase out of financing coal before 1st of January 2030. Then there is some themes around getting our own house in order, very important, of course. So we linked executive remuneration to climate targets. and also have very clear targets around how we reduce our own emissions and have a target to do that by 50% by 2025 from a baseline in 2019. And I think very importantly as well, NatWest is one of the first global banks to have science-based targets validated by the Science Based Initiative. So it's not just us telling the investor community what we're doing, it's also validated externally. And in Asia, of course, we spend a lot of time with our customers across the whole region by sharing our knowledge and expertise in sustainable finance. And we work very closely with them on ESG issuance in terms of getting the level of understanding and also, of course, the rapid development that continuously need engagement with our. And if we turn to NatWest in Asia, we support our customers across the region by sharing our knowledge and expertise on sustainable finance. Asian investors are also increasingly active in ESG label transactions from the issuers side outside of the region. So that's a key area of focus for us and channeling that finance flow from one end of the world to the other. The volume in the voluntary carbon market shows that more and more companies sees it as a pathway while working, of course, on their ability to reduce emissions in the first place, which clearly is the main priority. There are many critics of the market and many concerns are valid. But the idea that someone puts his hand in the pocket voluntarily to channel financing to projects that can stop or abate carbon emissions, that has to be a good thing. So at NatWest, we recently teamed up with 8 other banks from across the world to create a company called Carbon Place. It's an innovative platform that will make it easier for buyers to access and scale the market that is so desperately needed. And as we're sitting in Singapore, of course, Singapore also plays a pretty important role in this particular market. The government here is very progressive, and in Climate Impact X, the carbon exchange, Singapore has one of the market leaders in the voluntary carbon credit market. Really exciting to see how finance corporates are coming together on this, I think, important initiative, and one that, despite all the criticism, I think can have a real impact.
What I really like about what you just explained and what NatWest is focused on is you're demonstrating leadership in market in terms of what you want to show and how you want to be working with customers, but also the intention and future goal that you're heading towards. So I am really excited to be able to circle back with you in the future to be able to talk about progress and what's been. So this leads me into a little bit more of a personal question in regards to sustainability. I think it's really clear we could easily have a 4-hour podcast, which we don't want to do to our poor listeners today, but I want to touch on for you as a CEO and your journey as a CEO, what have you personally learned the most through the sustainability journey, and what are you most proud of?
It's a long list. I think the most important thing I have learned is that climate change is a risk that cannot be diversified away from. Whether you look at the physical risks, such as flooding, heat waves, or sea levels rising, or challenges with transition to renewable energy, these are facts that we need to deal with as an industry, and it requires engagement from all stakeholders. And being proud of, I think there's certainly a much, much higher engagement today than we've seen at any point, and it's evolving all the time. And I think the focus that is being put into this really important issue is definitely something to be proud of.
And if there's one thing that you'd like listeners to take away from our conversations today, what would that be?
Engagement. We all have a role to play in fighting climate change, whether at home or joining advocate groups, raising awareness, or of course at work. And there are plenty of options. I think fighting climate change is a team sport. No one can do it on their own. And if you think about advocate groups, was mentioning just here in Singapore, there are so many of them all doing really, really great things. Coastal Native springs to mind. They're hosting film screenings, talks, and even art exhibitions with ocean themes. There's a group called Stridey that are doing beach cleanups. There's our Singapore reefs. We're helping to protect the coral reefs around Singapore. All of them doing amazing things, not least, of course, raising awareness of the need to protect the ocean.
I just want to say thank you so much, Soren, for joining us for the podcast and for being my first guest on this podcast series with BritCham. I just want to end on one thing that you just mentioned. No one person can do this on their own. So thank you so much for your generosity and what you shared. And I hope for all our listeners, you've enjoyed this podcast as much as what I have in being able to interact with Soren in bringing this topic to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe and why not leave us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple, Google and the other podcast platforms. For more information about the Chamber, please visit our website at www.britcham.org.sg and tune in next time for a brand new episode.